From WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Terry Gross with Fresh Air. On today's Fresh Air, the uprising continues. Rap music star Ice-T says if he weren't a celebrity, he'd be rioting in the streets. He even has a rap called Cop Killer with the refrain of Die, 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 Pig, Die. We'll ask him why he's written such inflammatory lyrics. We'll also talk with Tony Massengale, who works with gang members in Los Angeles trying to keep peace. We'll call African-American sociologist William Julius Wilson, the originator of the term underclass. He says urban poverty is worse today than it's ever been before. And we'll check in again with Janet Clayton, assistant editor of the Los Angeles Times editorial page. That's all coming up on Fresh Air. First, the news.
From National Public Radio News in Washington, I'm Corey Flintoff. Attorney General William Barr said today that a federal grand jury in Los Angeles is reviewing evidence to determine whether the police officers who beat Rodney King should be charged with federal civil rights violations. Barr said that the jury has been impaneled and subpoenas have been served. The Justice Department can prosecute police brutality under a law that forbids public officials from depriving citizens of their constitutional rights. Federal officials say their investigation will also focus on the conduct of the 15 other officers who were present at the King beating. Philadelphia Police Commissioner Willie Williams says he doesn't regret having accepted the position of Los Angeles' next chief of police. Williams is expected to take over from the embattled L.A. police chief Daryl Gates next month. Vicki Quay of member station WHYY reports.
Williams says when he accepted the position, he knew a not guilty verdict from the Simi Valley, California jury could cause some problems. But he says he never expected the 2 days of riots that have rocked Los Angeles. Still, Williams says he doesn't regret his decision.
You have to take advantage of opportunities when they come. You're going to have the good, the bad, and the in-between. And I would, if it were offered to me tomorrow, I would still take it.
Philadelphia has experienced its own problems in the wake of the Rodney King verdict. Last night, 3 cars were set on fire, and when firefighters tried to put one of them out, a crowd threw eggs and chanted King's name. Williams is boosting police patrols this weekend, and he says the force is prepared to arrest large numbers of people in the event of any disturbances. For National Public Radio, I'm Vicki Quay in Philadelphia.
A senior State Department official told Congress today that Russia will not be able to meet the schedule for destroying chemical weapons that the U.S. and the former Soviet Union had agreed to. NPR's Anne Garrels reports.
The head of the U.S. delegation to the disarmament conference in Geneva told a Senate panel the Russians can't get started. They can't find a site and have no industrial-sized destruction plan even on the drawing board. Stephen Ledigar said there are two problems, money and opposition from Russians who do not want disposal plants built near them. This is just one of several arms control agreements that are now in question, among them treaties to slash the numbers of conventional and long-range nuclear weapons, and an agreement to destroy all land-based short-range nuclear weapons. To encourage the destruction of nuclear weapons, the Congress has provided $400 million in assistance. Ledigar said the U.S. is now willing to offer financial help to expedite the destruction of chemical weapons, too. I'm Anne Garrels in Washington.
Stock prices closed lower today on Wall Street, driven down by uncertainty about rumors of rioting in the nation's financial centers. The Dow Jones Industrial Average lost 23 points to close at 3,336. Declines led advances by a slight margin. This is NPR News. The Interior Department has reduced its offshore oil and gas leasing program for the next 5 years, but environmentalists charge that it's still dangerous and unnecessary. The department's final plan, released today, excludes more federally owned territory from drilling than the leasing moratorium already imposed by President Bush. The plan limits most drilling to Alaska and the central and western Gulf of Mexico. Environmentalists charge that the drilling off the coast of Alaska threatens the fish and sea mammals that native people live on. The chairman of the United Nations Global Warming Talks introduced a new treaty proposal today which would break the deadlock that has stalled the negotiations. The proposal strikes a compromise between the United States and other industrialized nations. NPR's Richard Harris has the story.
Europe and Japan have been pushing for a treaty that commits the industrialized world to freeze emissions of the gases that contribute to the greenhouse effect at their 1990 levels by the year 2000. but the United States won't go along with that proposal, even though a White House study shows it probably wouldn't cost much. So today, Jean Rappert, the chairman of the climate talks, suggested a compromise. Industrialized countries would promise to take specific measures that, in theory, will freeze emissions, but they won't promise to reach that goal. Environmental groups hate this approach. They say it leaves far too many loopholes and excuses for inaction. But Rappert said the compromise is the best hope for saving the faltering climate talks. This is Richard Harris in Washington.
International banking experts warned a Senate panel today that most American aid to the former Soviet republics could wind up paying off old debts rather than building a new society. The experts told a Senate Finance Subcommittee that the debt run up by the Soviet Union must be restructured so that it doesn't drain the new republics. They said that unless the debt is restructured, most American aid may simply wind up being paid to European banks. This is NPR News.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. We're devoting our whole program today to the uprising in Los Angeles, which has spread to several other cities across the country. The interview with Patty Davis and pollster David Moore will be heard next week. Yesterday, we spoke with Janet Clayton, assistant editor of the Los Angeles Times editorial page. She told us she was leaving work early because of the curfew and would be heading over to her mother's house in South Central LA, the area where the looting and violence first erupted. We wanted to check in with her today. I asked her what she and her mother talked about last night.
Well, you know, she's been through this before, of course, in 1965, and actually I have been through it too, although not to the same degree, because as I said, I was not an adult when Watts occurred, so it didn't have a big psychic toll on me. But she's been through this before, and, you know, it's worse this time. And I think she's, in a way, she's more discouraged this time, because I think that she had hoped that she would never live to see this again, as would any sane person. So, she got to the point where she's pretty full of it. She turned it off, the television. She didn't want to see any more of it. She was busy cleaning the kitchen. It was cleaner than usual yesterday, which is what she tends to do when she's nervous and needs to occupy herself. She cleans, and she was cleaning up a storm yesterday.
How close was rioting or looting to her house? How close did it come?
The looting and the rioting, it wasn't as if people were just taking to the street and torching everything they saw. It was quite targeted, it seemed to me, and the commercial establishments were the ones that were hit, and those occurred, you know, within five blocks of her house on major streets. She's on a residential street, and so the residential streets were not affected, but the minute you would get in your car or walk out and go to any major intersections, she was surrounded on every side by the major streets.
Could you see any pattern to which businesses were being torched and looted, or was it just whatever was around?
It tended to be whatever was around, although some people are suggesting that Korean-owned businesses were targeted specifically, although we have a story in our paper today talking about all the many black-owned businesses that were hurt and destroyed by this. So it certainly, everybody's been hurt by this. I don't know whether Korean businesses have been specifically targeted. I know that many in the Korean American community certainly feel they were specifically targeted, but I don't know whether that was a function of the fact that they were targeted or the fact that they were there.
What's your sense of what's happening behind the scenes now to quiet things down? I don't mean by official law enforcement officers, but more from, you know, community and political activists.
Oh, well, you know, they're having all the usual meetings, you know, but everyone's seen this before, and they don't have particular faith in, you know, the same old political people sitting down with the same old political organizations saying, you know, we really must do something. But I don't know, someone suggested to me that maybe this will do for black people in Los Angeles and maybe nationwide what the Anita Hill, Clarence Thomas controversy did for women, and that it made women, so many women, so angry that they mobilized behind that. And you're seeing now some evidence in some of the congressional Senate races that maybe that's making some kind of difference. One can hope that there will be some sort of difference made that black people and people who feel that they have been disregarded and disrespected will find a way to channel that anger into something that will really make them have some real power, as opposed to sitting around and talking about it and, gee, isn't it a shame? Maybe this will finally be the thing that sparks some kind of political systemic change. And I think that's the most optimistic face you can put on this. But I think, you know, you have to hope for something like that. Otherwise, why get out of bed in the morning?
You know, you were talking about your mother and how she felt like she'd been through this before in 65, and it was just so upsetting to her to see it happening again. What has she told you about what life was like right after Watts in the neighborhood, you know, right after the riots in the neighborhood?
Well, the thing to remember about the Watts riots is it was quite contained. It wasn't Watts. We did not live in Watts. And all that was occurring to us, in effect, in 1965 is that our neighborhood was under a curfew, as were all neighborhoods with any black people in them, basically. And so we were under curfew, which we are now. But it, frankly, it wasn't as devastating as this current uprising, because you know, she made that point that my aunt did live directly in the Watts area, and she was more directly affected by it. But it really didn't change our lives in any fundamental way. It didn't torch stores in her neighborhood. But it's different now, and my mom has, you know, got to pass by all this stuff. She's got to look at this, and all of these shells of buildings are going to be there for many, many months, many, many months. And some of these businesses are not going to return. And it's going to, she's afraid it's going to take another generation. And she said she's not going to live to see it, she doesn't think, before all these stores return, if they ever do return. And it makes her very sad because she wonders what kind of world we're leaving to my daughter. And that's a good question, and I can't answer it.
Do you know what you'll be addressing on the editorial page tomorrow?
Yeah, we're going to have another editorial talking about, you know, obviously still the riots, and trying to point out to people that, you know, the good people who have been trying to help in this situation. We've got lots of great examples of people who have become good Samaritans, and trying to emphasize some of that, as well as talking about how, you know, obviously the victims here and the important role the federal government now is going to have to play in this if they're serious about addressing some of the core problems, some of the underlying problems that made this happen. So we're going to be addressing those three themes tomorrow.
Janet, thank you very much for talking with us.
Sure, sure, and thank you for calling.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Janet Clayton is assistant editor of the Los Angeles Times editorial page. Coming up, a community organizer who has worked with the gangs of Los Angeles. First, a short break. This is Fresh Air. My guest, Tony Massengale, spent 5 years as the assistant director in charge of field operations for the Community Youth Gang Services Project. It's a countywide community-based organization in Los Angeles and the largest non-law enforcement gang project in the country. Their work includes everything from graffiti removal to school and park-based work with kids and parents to organizing neighborhood watches. Since 1988, Massengale has been a freelance community organizer, trainer, and consultant to a variety of community organizations in L.A. We spoke to him earlier today from a Los Angeles church that he told us was functioning as a safe house and information network. I asked him if he thinks that many gangs have been rioting.
We estimate that not more than about 30% of the direct participants in the incidents out there have been gang members.
Yeah, but what percentage of the gangs are out there?
You could probably estimate that there are a high percentage of gangs and what might be called posses or small cliques from all of the neighborhood gangs. And so we're talking about beginning in South Central L.A., moving south all the way to Compton, and as far north as Hollywood and the San Fernando Valley. There's just widespread participation of young people who are gang affiliated. But again, they represent not more than about 30% of the overall participants in the looting and burning.
Do you think that the gangs are helping to lead it, or are they just mixed in there?
I don't think you could talk about this, any of this, in terms of leadership.
Uh-huh.
The center or core of the activity is simply an angry reaction. And from there, it spreads out to folk taking advantage of the opportunity to loot and to cause excitement or just to vent some frustration. There is also just a whole range of emotions that you pick up as you ride the streets out there.
So what have you been doing today?
I started out this morning helping to prepare some statements that would sum up what's going on in one part of the city with regard to what is now about 500 people who've decided to begin a rebuilding and cleanup process. It was a spontaneous reaction that started with Edward James Olmos, and we put out the call with him and are now coordinating about 500 people that are doing neighborhood cleanup. And so those are youth and residents and volunteers. Also, some people who've been burned out of their own homes have joined that effort. So I spent the morning working on that.
Have you spoken to anyone you know who has actually been in the streets, you know, looting or whatever? What did they say to you about why they were there?
A lot of the emotion at this point in the game is simply a reaction to the availability of free goods that are in those stores and shops. I think that mood is different from the mood that started two nights ago when people were literally angry at the response of the Rodney King verdict, which we have to add is a buildup of a year of frustration that actually didn't start with the King incident. It started with tension and conflict around the Sundaju verdict, the woman who shot the black female teenager, Latasha Harlins. So those tensions in the community of Sundaju not being sentenced to any jail time for the killing that was perpetrated on the young black female, the King verdict, those tensions fueled or at least ignited the reaction two nights ago. That was pure uncut anger, what we experienced out there. At this point in the game, the looting and the street activity, at least up until curfew last night, was so widespread, it was simply residents, be they black, Latino, white, local residents from the San Fernando Valley to Hollywood to South Central Los Angeles and Point South, taking advantage of the situation, taking what appeared to me to be a kind of a hopelessness. Gee whiz, we're already on the bottom. The stores are there. We might as well get some stuff because, frankly, after tonight, who knows what we'll have. The guard is coming in. The stores are already burned down. We might as well get what we can. So it's a little different kind of mood as of last night and this morning.
What about the violence? Have you spoken to anyone who's admitted to you that they were involved in beating someone up or, you know, hurting someone as part of the activity?
The first violence was the afternoon of the verdict. Within an hour or so of the verdict, the incident on Florence and Normandy, where the truck driver was pulled out of his truck and beaten, where other cars were stopped and people who looked white or were white were attacked. That was some of the first violence, and we can safely say that those were street gang-involved young people who initiated that. And that's why we were fearful that that kind of activity would spread. The bottom line is that it didn't. You have to understand that the gangs in Los Angeles are not known for being timid. We had 770 71 gang-related homicides in L.A. County last year. They are well-armed, and they are in the business not so much of dealing drugs, not so much of committing crimes of opportunity, but for violence. Gang banging is what we call it out here. And so what we were afraid of was that that kind of violence would become the order of the day. The bottom line is that it didn't. And so that's why we're able to say that we know the street gangs themselves are not as involved as one might think in this whole situation.
I want to get back to something we were talking about a little earlier. Do you think that there's almost a peer pressure to participate in the rioting now?
A peer pressure? I don't think so. I don't think so. I think that to assume that the only stream of sentiment in South Central Los Angeles and other parts of the city that are impacted, to assume that the only sentiment is let's get all we can, let's get involved in the negatives that are going on, is to miss the point. The very large majority of people in South Central Los Angeles are not feeling very good at all about what's going on. They do not support this kind of reaction. It's not to say they're not angry. They're angry about a lot of things. They're angry at a lot of official stuff that has missed it over the years. They're angry at the most recent judicial decisions here in the area. But they are channeling that anger in a different way. And so while you see a lot of people on television who are doing a lot of stuff, that is still a small part of this city.
Do you live in a neighborhood where there's been a lot of looting?
Although I was born and raised in South Central Los Angeles, I now live in a L.A. suburb called Pasadena. And Pasadena has been known for being not only an integrated community, but a community that was a pleasant place to live. I have to report to you that last night, a half a block from my house, a small store and some adjacent buildings were burned to the ground. I got reports that other acts of vandalism and burning had also occurred in the city. So it's spread to just a number of outlying areas, including my town.
I'm wondering if you think that this is affecting, if this is adding tension to whites and African Americans who are friendly with each other. Do you know what I'm saying? Like if even in communities or among friends in which there is a real relationship, if the tensions of the past few days is kind of adding tension into those relationships?
I think the short answer is yes. I think that the longer view is going to indicate that people are going to try that much harder to stay in communication, to try to understand, to try to reestablish the common ground that we've discovered in the recent years, and to try to build on that. There's I think that kind of desire and that kind of will, and I don't think we'll lose the relationships that have been built up over the years. In my opinion, what we're experiencing has a lot to do with the community building that had begun in Los Angeles, but had never been completed. You've got over 100 different ethnic groups represented here, and you've got just a lot of people who are on the bottom of the economic ladder, and they're all colors, and those are the people who are most represented out in the looting that's going on, and it just speaks to the need to begin the community building just as soon as possible. The job is just hasn't been done here in Los Angeles, and we've assumed a lot of things, we've glossed over a lot of things, and we've discounted what people are feeling and thinking about what's going on at some of the upper levels of government and business. And bottom line is that people have been neglected and overlooked and discounted. And they're sending us a message that they're not going to be overlooked indefinitely. So I think we've got a lot of work to do here in L.A.
Let me just ask you, what's the most disturbing thing you've seen in the past couple of days?
I think the most disturbing thing for me has been the willingness on the part of some merchants to begin to pick up arms and engage in a kind of a military posture to protect their shops and to protect themselves out on the street. A violent response on the part of citizens begets more violent responses, and those kind of tendencies can escalate the situation. And I'm referring specifically to the Korean merchants who you might have caught on national TV.
Well, you know, I was wondering, since their faces have been on national TV, I was wondering if you knew if there was any talk about revenge on the street to try to track the people who, everyone saw their faces. Do you know what I'm saying? And if I were one of those people who was shown on TV with a gun, I'd be pretty worried about my life right now.
Well, it gives some indication, Terry, that people are at a desperate point, and we can understand them being very concerned not only about their businesses,
but their lives,
because of the tension between particularly the Black and Korean communities here in L.A. On the other hand, that kind of response we know is not a good signal, because just like they've got 38s and automatic weapons, other people do too, and it sends the wrong kind of signal just across the board. So we're hoping that we don't see more of that kind of situation out on the street. If we get down to a question of street violence or street street vigilantism, if you will, the reactions are going to be uncontrollable. That's the only thing that hasn't happened up till now, and that is the interpersonal violence, if you will, that could have been an aspect of this whole scene. It's been minimal. We've only had 31 deaths so far, and with all of that territory taken into account, with the thousands of fires that have been set, we've only had 31 deaths. So I'm counting our blessings where that's concerned, and I'm suggesting that 31 is small relative to what we've got here in L.A.
Tony Massengale is a community organizer in Los Angeles. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.
Major funding for Fresh Air is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Additional support comes from the listeners of WHYY in Philadelphia, where Fresh Air is produced. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
From Philadelphia, I'm Terry Gross with Fresh Air. Cop Killer is the name of a song by rap music star Ice-T. It's an angry song about the L.A. police with the refrain, Die, Pig, Die. Coming up, we talk with Ice-T about his inflammatory record and the rioting in L.A., his hometown. Then we'll talk with William Julius Wilson, an African-American sociologist who has written extensively about urban poverty and the underclass. He says to understand the riots, you have to understand that urban poverty today is worse than it's ever been before. That's all coming up on Fresh Air.
From National Public Radio News in Washington, I'm Barbara Campbell. President Bush is preparing to address the nation at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 6 p.m. Pacific Time, hoping to deter further rioting in Los Angeles. The president also has 4,000 soldiers and Marines standing by to help Los Angeles police. 37 people have been killed in two nights of shooting, arson, and looting in protests against not guilty verdicts in the case of four white police officers accused of beating black motorists Rodney King. King today made his own emotional plea for calm, saying the riots were hurting children and the elderly. He asked the people of Los Angeles to work out their problems. Unrest has hit a few other cities. In Atlanta today, police fired tear gas into a crowd of black protesters who hurled bricks. In Las Vegas, Nevada Governor Bob Miller activated the National Guard. The Justice Department announced today that a federal grand jury in Los Angeles has begun reviewing the Rodney King beating incident. From Los Angeles, NPR's Wendy Kaufman reports.
Attorney General William Barr said today the federal government's criminal investigation into possible civil rights violations against Rodney King has moved into high gear. Subpoenas have been served. Evidence is being reviewed. Justice Department officials say the investigation is of the highest priority. The federal investigation of the beating incident in March 1991 began 2 days after King was beaten by police. But the investigation had been held in abeyance, pending the state court verdict. That verdict, not guilty, was announced on Wednesday. The violence that followed has now claimed at least 37 lives, more than were killed during the Watts riots. More than 1,300 people have been injured since the verdict was announced. In Los Angeles, this is Wendy Kaufman reporting.
French President François Mitterrand has blamed the social unrest in Los Angeles and other American cities on the Bush administration and its failure to protect minorities. From Paris, Lynn Terry reports.
President Mitterrand told a French radio station that the unrest in the U.S. is a result of the lack of social legislation and protection in America. The harshness of this remark was unusual. Normally, Mitterrand refuses to comment on domestic situations in other countries, especially if they're allies. The riots in Los Angeles have received top coverage here. An editorial in the respected daily Le Monde said the explosion of violence was sparked by a scandalous verdict. A cartoon on the front page was equally critical of the U.S. It showed Mickey Mouse, dressed up as a gangster, asking a child to choose between two scenes, a man dying in a prison gas chamber or a white policeman beating a black man. For National Public Radio, this is Lynn Terry in Paris.
On Wall Street today, the Dow Jones Industrial Average fell 23.03 to 33.36.09. Declines led advances by a margin of about 9-8 in active trading. This is NPR. The state of Jalisco in Mexico, the scene of the deadly sewer line blast, has a new governor. The new official replaces one who stepped down after being accused of negligence in the gas leak and explosions that killed some 200 people in Guadalajara. Nine other government and oil company officials are being held without bail on charges of negligent homicide. Investigators say the main cause of the disaster was gas from a leaking pipe belonging to the state oil monopoly Pemex. In San Salvador, thousands of left-wing activists marched through the capital to protest the El Salvadoran government's alleged failure to comply with United Nations brokered peace accords. Tom Gibb reports from San Salvador.
Several hundred uniformed guerrillas took part in the May Day march this morning. This is the first major deadline in peace accords signed between leftist rebels and the U.S.-backed government in January. the rebels should have started to hand in their weapons today. But they say they won't do this until the government disbands the old military-run security forces and starts to establish a new civilian police. Both sides are looking to the United Nations to help resolve the dispute. Most observers now believe that the peace process will now take much longer than the nine-month calendar set down in the accords. For National Public Radio, this is Tom Gibb in San Salvador.
Afghanistan's new Islamic government is taking control, and its new president is revealing more of his views. President Sibghatullah Mojaddidi spoke at the huge central mosque in the capital city, Kabul. He warned Afghans not to choose a woman as their leader. He said the weakest nations in the world are those led by women, but he says Islam respects women and considers them equal to men. Mojaddidi also hinted at a pardon for ousted President Najibullah, who headed the Soviet-backed regime. This is National Public Radio News in Washington.
This is Fresh Air. Most Americans are shocked by the spreading violence across the country, but my guest, rap music star Ice-T, is not. Ice-T is from South Central L.A., where the rioting first broke out. His lyrics are about gangs and street violence. He co-starred in the movie New Jack City as a renegade undercover cop trying to bust a crack house. But on his new record, Body Count, he has a track called Cop Killer, about someone who has a gun and is ready to use it on a cop. The lyrics include words that aren't usually used on the radio. The chorus is, F the police for Daryl Gates, F the police for Rodney King.
But tonight we get even.
We called Ice-T to talk about his inflammatory lyrics and his reaction to the rioting in L.A. I asked him what he's thinking about now as he watches his neighborhood go up in flames.
Well, it's a sad sight, you know. It's, you know, I'm looking, I saw a lot of places that I grew up around burned down. But at the same time, it's something that I predicted, you know. I knew it was going to happen sooner or later. And I'm not surprised at all.
Have you been out on the streets in the past couple of days?
Yeah, I've been out there. And I have nothing but love out there. I go out there. I walk right amongst the people. They're like, what's up, Ice? You know, I cannot stop them. The only person that could have stopped them was the person that would have got in there and got that guilty verdict. You know?
So what have you been doing on the streets?
Just hanging out, talking, asking them to be careful, telling them to watch out for these National Guards. Just, you know, it's my neighborhood. You know, I'm not afraid because it's my people. And when I was up here in Hollywood cooling out, the gay people were rolling through Hollywood, Queer Nation, about 3,000 of them. And they were like, get with us, you know, and they're up here mad. See, the problem with this is, America was not prepared for so many people to be so angry. They were used to just being able to do something to somebody black and everybody else said it's okay. But the campuses, the schools, and people are afraid. My attitude is, if you weren't prepared for this, if you didn't think it was going to happen, or if you are at all surprised, then it's your fault.
Were you in a gang before you before you rapped?
Yeah.
What was the worst that you did in a gang in terms of violence against a person?
Whatever, you know, everything happens in a gang.
Uh-huh.
You know, and you know, the day before this riot jumped off, the gangs in L.A. had called a truce. And that was you got no national publicity for that. The Crips and the Bloods were hugging each other on TV. There were people that, you know, and that's like, okay, well, the gang stopped. I mean, that was the biggest thing that happened in my life was to see that happen. And then the next day, and, you know, the problem is, if these National Guards go into that neighborhood and they start shooting, it's not going to be like they're going to be rounding up people from Omaha, Nebraska. They got hardened people down there. These kids been at war for the last 15 years, and now they're together, They're going to run into some serious bloodshed down there.
Let me ask you about your rep cop killer, which is about a character who's got his gun and is going to kill a cop, and the chorus is, die, 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 pig, die, F the police. Is that a rap that's supposed to be advocating people going out onto the streets and doing that?
No, it's just it's a rap that lets you know that under certain situations, you will push people to that attitude.
I don't understand what you mean.
Okay. Before this record came out, before this riot happened, you might have thought that there was one person who thought like that. Now you're seeing the people out there who have that attitude. It's a rap that says, listen to me. The record goes, I got my ski mask on, I got my black shirt on, I got my black gloves on. This shit has been too long. I got my 12-gauge sawed off, got my headlights turned off. And then the chorus is, cop killer is better you than me. Cop killer, fuck police brutality. It's a record about rebellion against police brutality. It's a guy who said, I am not going to allow you to whoop on me. And if that's what it takes, then that's what it takes. Because they are killing us out there. And when they kill us, they do not go to jail. A cop gets laid off for murdering somebody. They don't go to jail. Why?
So do you feel that your record is encouraging people to take to the streets? And do you want it to have an effect?
Nobody's listening to my record at this point. This is beyond my record. That record was just somebody, I gave you warning. That record was warning, you know? I mean, I can almost answer every question like, refer to album 3, track 1. Body Iceberg album and listen to album 3, track 1, and I told you there was going to be martial law. You know? If you listen to the song Body Count, I say, what does a brother got to do to get a message through? You know, you try to ban the AK, I got 10 of them stashed with a case of hand grenades. The tension mounts. Up to now, it was just a record, and it was so Ice-T running his mouth. But now you're seeing it's real. It's like, I don't even have to do nothing now. I could just sit back and, you know, on some old Nostradamus stuff and just watch it all unveil. I predicted it all. I predict this riot to continue all over the United States for at least another week.
Okay, so you feel like your records are predicting it, but on the other hand, you know, you could say that your records are helping to incite it.
I could care less because I want to see the people rise up. I'm tired of America being cowards. I'm tired of America's being cowards. I mean, I'm not just a rapper. Rapping is something that I do. But I'm more of a person who really is sincerely mad at this system and how it's been treating people. I got brothers in jail for 4 years for ounce of weed. For an ounce of weed. You know, people I ain't seen.
What have the cops done to you that you see them as the enemy?
Put me in jail, killed a couple of my friends, beat me, harassed me, looked me in my eyes because I'm in my car and told me to get over, put me on the side of the road, laid me down in the street like a punk. All it has to do is happen to you once and you'll hate them. You know, I live it. You know, if you're not from L.A., you don't understand the Gestapo force of police that they have in L.A. They're not humans. You know, I just think white America or upper class don't even have any way of understanding the injustices to go on in the ghetto. And until you do, it's just a waste of my time explaining it to you. Do you have anybody in prison, any friends?
Actually, I don't.
I got buddies on death row. I get phone calls every day from them. You know what I'm saying? On death row. And they ain't killed nobody.
Well, do you think that taking to the streets and burning down stores and carrying guns is like a really good solution to the problem?
Is that how we had the first American Revolution where we broke away from the British? Ain't that how we did it? Ain't that how they do it in the Persian Gulf? Ain't that how they did it in Panama? Isn't that how a revolution takes place?
By destroying your own neighborhood? Not exactly.
Well, they're moving to Beverly Hills right now. They just hit Beverly Center last night. It ain't their own neighborhood. You know, it'll be your neighborhood next. It's going down. It's going down.
That was rap music star Ice-T. Coming up, a talk with sociologist William Julius Wilson, who writes about urban poverty and public policy. This is Fresh Air.
The word underclass was coined by my guest William Julius Wilson. He's an African-American sociologist who has written several books about urban poverty, race, and public policy. He's a professor at the University of Chicago. We called him to see if he could help put in context the violent reaction to the police brutality verdict. I asked him if he's afraid that as a result of the verdict and its aftermath, African-Americans will be more convinced that whites are racist, and whites will be more convinced that African-Americans are violent.
Yes, you see, if following the verdict, if there had just been limited or small-scale protests or just limited or small-scale rioting, many people would have said, okay, I can understand that because the decision was so blatant miscarriage of justice. So offensive. And I think that that was a view that expressed by a number of people following the verdict. But since the rioting was so massive, and since the TV cameras captured people coming out of the stores carrying goods, and some of them laughing and so on, that sympathy dissipated. And there was it just sort of reinforced some of the negative stereotypes that a lot of people in a general society have. I think it's set back race relations temporarily. On the other hand, it may trigger some positive change.
Like what?
Well, the government has been sitting on its hands. There's been no major urban agenda to address these problems. The Bush administration and the prior Reagan administration generally ignored urban problems. Mayors across the city have been struggling without adequate federal support, and they have not been able to get the Bush administration to consider seriously a major program to address some of these problems. And I think that the riots have really exposed the Bush administration's response to urban areas, and has embarrassed them to the point where I think they will now be more receptive to approaches from mayors to work with them in addressing some of these problems.
I wonder if you look back historically to the riots in the north of the 1960s, do you think that there was good that came out of those?
Well, initially, you know, you had the Kerner Commission report, and then you had, there was a good deal of talk about affirmative action programs and the passage of civil rights legislation, and I think there was much more attention to these problems. I thought that the cities got greater support from the federal government and funds provided for education and job training and this sort of thing. But since Reagan entered office, there's been a sharp decline in federal support for urban programs in education, social services, job creation, job training.
So you think that there was initially a kind of constructive response?
It wasn't sustained over a long period of time, right?
Mm-hmm. So well, how optimistic are you that the Bush administration will respond in a positive way to the riots?
I think they're going to respond. They're going to move off dead center. They're going to introduce some programs. They're going to appoint some commissions to review the issues and come up with some recommendations, and they may follow on some of the recommendations. How significant they will be will depend on the amount of pressure they feel to continue to address the problems. I must tell you that I'm not terribly optimistic that they are going to move in a forceful way to address these problems, to introduce programs that would make a big difference, but I do think that they're going to move from a position of indifference to one of at least acknowledging the need to do something.
My guest is sociologist William Julius Wilson. More in just 1 minute. This is Fresh Air.
Noah Adams is with us. Let's see what's coming up on All Things Considered. Noah, what do you have on the riots in L.A.?
Hi, Terry. Wendy Kaufman reports on the developments today and the decision by President Bush to send in 1,000 federal law enforcement officers. We'll talk with a high school student in Berkeley, California, who tells us about a demonstration in her school. They were asking for peace among the races and for better communication and education. And with a college student in Buffalo, New York, who has led a protest march to City Hall there demanding that city officials denounce the Rodney King verdict. Also, Kathleen Hunt reports from Azerbaijan on efforts to set up a new government there. And a controversy in western Massachusetts involving Arlo Guthrie and, once again, Alice's Restaurant.
Thanks, Noah. That and more on All Things Considered from National Public Radio. My guest is sociologist William Julius Wilson, author of several books on the underclass and public policy, including his latest, The Truly Disadvantaged. I know you've been working on, I'm not sure if it's finished or not, an ethnographic study of those who live in Chicago's poorest neighborhoods. And I'm wondering if you found anything that's relevant to the riots that we're seeing now.
One thing that we have found is that there is growing anger, particularly among the young black males, among males in general in the inner city. Many of them have, you know, lost employment over the years. There's been a significant decline in the number of African-American males from the inner city in manufacturing industries. I mean, the drop is incredible. And it's associated with a sharp decline in manufacturing industries in Chicago. But other groups have also experienced a loss of jobs in manufacturing, but at a much slower rate. And blacks have been pushed into laboring jobs, low-paying laboring jobs, service jobs, or into joblessness at the very time when there has been an influx of women and women and immigrants into the labor market. And it's quite clear from our research that employers would rather hire the immigrants and women than the black males. And the black males experiencing declining employment opportunities, plummeting economic, socioeconomic status, are angry. And they express their anger in many ways. They express their anger openly on the job sometimes in their dehumanizing work settings. They express their anger in crime. And so it doesn't surprise me that they would express their anger, many of them, in somewhat violent ways in response to this shocking decision, because it symbolizes what they feel is wrong with society. It symbolizes to them that no one really cares about their position, their plight, and they strike back.
In the presidential campaign, it seemed as if the candidates, for the most part, have been afraid to really address issues pertaining to race and to the poor, because they're afraid it will alienate the middle class. And I'm wondering how you think the events of the last couple of days might or might not change that.
Well, I think the events have been so dramatic, and they underline major problems in our society that threaten all of us, that candidates will not be reluctant to speak to them. I think that people living in these urban areas are threatened by this kind of violence, and they want to see it ended. And here is an opportunity now for the candidates to speak directly to these problems and say, look, we're trying to enhance the quality of life of all citizens in our areas, not only those who live in the impoverished areas, but those who live in other areas as well. And we don't, and problems in the impoverished areas, as we've seen in Los Angeles, affect all of us. Sometimes they spill over. And so we have to address these problems. I think that if they approach the issues in that way, they won't have to worry too much.
I've been hearing that there's talk of how if people are rioting in the hopes of creating some change, that there'd be more likely to be change if they moved into more white, middle class, or affluent neighborhoods, because the more impact you have on whites and on the middle class, the more likely there is to be change.
I just think that's, you have that kind of situation, you're likely to experience more repression than anything else. I think it's short-sighted to for anyone to advocate attacking other individuals or going into other neighborhoods and creating disturbances as a way to improve your own situation. I think, if anything, you're just likely to get people much more angry, and rather than moving in a positive direction, you might enter a period of repression. So that's, I think, that'd be a short-sighted view to espouse.
Is there anything you'd like to add before we wrap up?
Well, I think there could be some positive effect from this, and that is there's been a good deal of a discussion about the need for an urban agenda. Two years ago, Mayor Dinkins organized the Urban Summit in New York, in which he pulled together mayors of the largest cities in the country to talk about an urban agenda. That meeting has been followed up by a number of smaller meetings among many of us who were involved in establishing this agenda. And I think that there will be more attention to the kinds of reports and recommendations that we produce now than before. And I see the possibility of at least the federal government joining in and seriously discussing the need for an urban agenda to address some of these problems.
William Julius Wilson is a professor of sociology at the University of Chicago. His books include The Truly Disadvantaged, The Inner City, The Underclass, and Public Policy. Fresh Air's senior producer is Danny Miller. Our interviews were produced by Amy Sallet, Naomi Person, and Joan Tui, with Roberta Sharrock, Sue Weinstein, and Sue Spolin, who also directed today's show. Dorothy Farabee is our administrative assistant. Our engineer was Audrey Vablaitis. I'm Terry Gross.
Major funding for Fresh Air is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Additional support comes from the listeners of WHYY in Philadelphia, where Fresh Air is produced. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
On the next Fresh Air, we continue our coverage of the national reaction to the acquittal of four police officers in the Rodney King beating trial. I'm Terry Gross. I hope you join us for the next Fresh Air.